From NPR and the Futuro Media Group, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. We put our hopes and dreams in our kids, and we want what's the best thing for them. Being a parent is hard work, full of rewards, stress, and of course, the wonder. Today, the pressures we put on ourselves.
Because I live in suburban Boston, my kids don't even speak Spanish.
And the lessons we learn along the way. All this and my interview with Sesame Street's Maria, the actress Sonia Manzano, as we talk parenthood. That's next on Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Stay with us. No se vayan. Hey, everyone. I want to tell you about something special. It's the first episode of NPR's new Hidden Brain podcast. Shankar Vedantam explores a conversational phenomenon called switch tracking, when two people think they're talking about the same thing, but in reality, they're speeding down separate tracks. It usually doesn't end well. The Hidden Brain podcast premieres September 22nd. Subscribe now on the NPR One app, iTunes, or npr.org/podcasts. And don't miss an episode. Welcome to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa.
Hi, Big Bird.
Oh, hi, Maria. How are you?
Okay, hi.
Sesame Street, one of my all-time favorite TV shows. And of course, that's Big Bird and Maria from Sesame Street. The show's been around for 45 years, and yet this year, it managed to make big news. First, the announcement that Sonia Manzano, the actress who played Maria for 44 years, would be retiring from the show. And then the surprising announcement that the show's first run would now be on HBO and would appear later on PBS, a true sign of the times for a changing media landscape. Sunny day, sleeping up. But despite these big changes, when anyone says Sesame Street, it's hard not to think of watching it with your own kids. Today's show is about parenthood. So we begin by speaking to an actress that so many parents, children, and former children know really, really well. Sonia Manzano started in the role of Maria in 1971. And over the years, different aspects of her own life would find their way onto the show. Sonia recently revealed in a new memoir that she had a difficult childhood. The book is called Becoming Maria, Love and Chaos in the South Bronx. And in it, she manages to convey the confusion, the fear, but also the enthusiasm of being a child. Sonia Manzano, thank you so much for joining us on Latino USA. It's great to have you in our studio.
My pleasure. I'm so happy to be here.
People just, when they realize who you are, it's a lot of love.
Yes.
What is that like, though, to feel like, you know, this kind of like you're the mom of so many, and it's just like love.
Yeah, well, it feels better than a stick in the eye, I can tell you that. But honestly, I'm not just the mom. What I am is a catalyst, and all of a sudden, the person who sees me remembers. I throw them back in time to sitting on their mother's laps or whoever was taking care of them and having that 1 hour of comfort and sanity and humor in their lives.
Maybe you could make me up a story.
Make up a story? You mean one that's not in a book?
Yes.
Well, I don't think I can make up a story on such short notice, Big Bird.
Well, then maybe you could tell me a true story. I know. Why don't you tell me your life story? Why don't you tell me about all the great and exciting things you've done in your life?
In Sesame Street, how does it happen that, is it the producers or is it your idea to basically say, look, these things are happening in my life, like I'm falling in love, I'm going to get married, I'm going to have a baby, and we should incorporate that into Sesame Street?
It was their idea. But they were very in tune with the cast. We were like the first reality show without the whining.
Was it weird to be having your television life parallel so much about your real life?
No, I found it. I think Maria's a better person than me. She's more patient than I am. And I was a writer for the show at that time. And I was really intrigued by the idea of taking these dense adult sensibilities about love and marriage and breaking it down to a form that a four-year-old could understand.
And on the show, Maria and Luis explained to Big Bird why adults hold hands when they're crossing the street.
Big Bird, I've got it. You see, it's very simple. See, the reason that people hold hands is that they like each other. So I guess
that's how I experienced love. And so that's how Luis and Maria experienced. I wrote them planning on having a pizza and camping out and doing things together all the time and wanting to be together.
More parallels occurred in real life and on TV with the birth of your baby named Gabriela on TV and in real life. You actually give a shout out to your husband, Luis, for being present for the birth of Gabriela.
Oh, honey, but you know, I couldn't have done it without you, honey.
Oh, thank you, honey.
I mean, honey, I'm so glad you were here, honey.
And it's kind of the opposite from your real life story, right? Your dad was maybe not present a lot.
No, he was not present at all. It was complete chaos, 24/7. It was a cycle of domestic violence, remorse, hope, domestic violence, remorse, hope. And it just was this cycle that my parents could simply not get out of.
What do you think was going on for your mom and dad about you and what they knew about you?
I don't think my father noticed me. I think we were there because my mother wanted to have kids. My mother's feeling was that we weren't physically hurt, so she was the target. If we happened to be in the way, we were hurt, but she was the target. So their relationship was, I don't know. People are very complicated. I was also happy a lot of the time, and I found wonder in the world a lot of the time.
You sure did. You found wonder, like, in this. One of my favorite points in the book is when you're like, oh, my God. And then I looked at my toes, and I started counting, and I realized I had five on each foot.
Yeah, right. I mean, this was before kids got any sort of education, before they started school. So I remember those moments in my life when I made these connections. Oh, my goodness, I have five fingers. There is symmetry and order in this world. That's the complexity of it. You're sort of on a tightrope. How can this mother, whose caresses I yearn for, let us live in this environment? How could this father that I'm afraid of, because I never know how he's going to be, make me laugh when he wiggles his ears? It's two things going on at the same time that are opposites.
When you talk about growing up and managing, you know, family and your parents, their invisibility in your life, there were several parts in the book where I got really sad. And I'm really thankful for the honesty. And you write about what I'm calling sexual assault. I know. And your face is like, what?
What?
But, you know, when you're talking about boys, I did not have this experience of, like, any boy just coming and feeling you up or putting their hands on your legs or between your legs or some. And yet you're kind of like, I wasn't sexually assaulted.
No, I mean, it was such a common thing. This is awful. This is like, you know, but let's say puberty, I'm 12. And, you know, all of us, you go to the pool and you're fine. You're having a good time, Crotona Park. Then all of a sudden you go into the water and all these guys come around you. I didn't notice that I was developing. And it was something that you never even mentioned to anyone. My sister talks about going to junior high school 55 and being grabbed at when she changed classes.
You didn't necessarily know.
No
parent had come to you and said,
yeah, like, this is wrong. Don't let somebody touch you. So it was not talked about and common for boys to do that.
You know, your character and the television show Sesame Street is all about kind of comfort. And yet in your real life, prior to getting onto the show, there was a lot of discomfort.
Are you ready for your special visit?
Will Maria stay with Elmo the whole time Elmo's here?
Absolutely.
Okay.
The first thing, actually, that that drew you to Sesame Street was when you were in college at Carnegie Mellon studying theater, and you see Sesame Street on television.
It was such a remarkable moment for me because in my chaotic childhood, I found comfort in shows like Father Knows Best and Leave It to Beaver.
You know, Mom, when we're in a mess, you kind of make things seem not so messy.
Well, isn't that sort of what mothers are for?
But I used to wonder, where are those people? And what is that environment that they live in? There were no Latins on television. There were no Latins in news. There were no newspapers. Well, we had a diario every once in a while. None in magazines. And so as a child, I really felt invisible. So when I saw Sesame Street and I see Susan and Gordon looking, talking to me from an environment that looked very much like many of the neighborhoods that I lived in, I was just flabbergasted. That was my stoop. Those were my construction doors. Those were my trash cans, just like they were in my neighborhood.
This notion of being completely invisible, your life, your family, people who look like you, people who sound like you.
Right.
To then encountering this moment on television on Sesame Street where you actually feel visible. Can you put some words to what that was like?
I began to believe in myself. I actually thought I could do that. At that time, when Latinos were on television, you were the butt of the joke. If you saw a Latin person on a sitcom, you sat there and waited for the taco joke to come in or this, you know, because you think that's why he's there. That's why he or she is there. Luis and Maria were not that. They were just there having a kid, looking for daycare, worried about fixing the toaster and keeping the fix-it shop open, just like other Americans.
And the fact that people feel like, do they actually come up to you and want to hug you?
They always want to hug me. They always want to hug me. That's absolutely.
What's and that like for you?
It's wonderful. I'm very gratified. I think that I set out to comfort children through television because I used to find comfort on television. And I feel I've accomplished what I unconsciously set out to do.
Very difficult question. I don't know if you've ever even been asked or answered. Your favorite character on Sesame Street? You'll never answer.
I will.
Ooh.
Oscar the Grouch.
Ah. Why?
I love it when men talk dirty to me. I think he's a very nuanced character. Carol Spinney, who plays him, gives him a very sophisticated voice. And you can't tell if he's 45 years old or if he's 8 years old. And he works on many different levels at once. And I find that appealing. Whereas Elmo is more like one-dimensional, which is perfect for the two-year-old. Oscar has a little bit more gravitas to him.
Sonia Manzano, thank you so much. And for your honesty in your book, in all your work, we really, really want to say thank you from Latino USA.
Me gustas, that means I like you. I really like you.
Sonia Manzano has more gravitas than you may have seen on screen. You can read about it in her memoir, Becoming Maria, Love and Chaos in the South Bronx. And personally, my favorite character on Sesame Street has always been Grover. I think the fact that he spoke with an accent just made me think of my dad, and that's why I fell in love with him. Coming up on Latino USA, an honest conversation about the worry that your kids aren't connecting enough to their culture. And guess whose mom this is?
You can, you know, wear something different and something nicer. Okay, please call me back. You're impossible.
Stay with us. No se vayan.
Es un buen tipo, mi viejo, que anda solo esperando. Tiene la tristeza larga de tanto venir.
enseñaste a ser hombre. Soy guerrero, orgulloso y yo siempre con tu nombre. Mi padre fuerte, mi protección para siempre. Mi memoria está llena, las historias en mi mente. Tu amor me enseñó a realizar todos mis sueños. Mi mejor amigo, cuando estaba tan pequeño, padre mío. Nunca te miro como enemigo. Mi primer profesor, mi jefe, y así le digo, así. Es un buen tipo, mi viejo.
Hey there, I'm so happy that you're listening and hoping that you will help us find even more listeners. Now, one way that you can do that right now is to rate and review Latino USA on iTunes. And if you really want to help us make the show, take a moment to go to latinousa.org, click on the donate button. Every single donation, no matter how big or how small, really helps. Muchas gracias.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from Lumber Liquidators, a proud sponsor of NPR, offering more than 400 styles, including hardwood, bamboo, laminate, and vinyl, with flooring specialists in hundreds of stores nationwide. More at lumberliquidators.com or 1-800-HARDWOOD. And Americans for the Arts, for more than half a century committed to transforming America's communities through the arts and arts education, in partnership with local, state, and national leaders. Learn more at AmericansForTheArts.org.
Welcome back to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. This week, our show is all about parenting, and two of us on the staff of Latino USA actually are parents. That would be me and Julio Varela, who is our digital director. Hey, Julio.
Hey, Maria. How are you?
I'm good, although I'm a parent, so you know it depends on the day.
Right now, we're good. Right now, we're good.
Right so now, we're good.
All that matters.
So I wanted to talk to you because something, we've talked about this in the past, and I bet a lot of people who listen to us have had similar experiences. You know, how do you make sure that you're handing down the right things to your kids, right? Like every parent has this. When you're a Latino parent, there is a whole other set of things that come up, right?
It's like a lot of pressure. I feel like I'm under pressure.
A lot of people talk about, you know, we want to make English the official language and English needs to, you know, everything needs to be in English. And actually, as a Latina parent, I'm often thinking my kid thankfully speaks great English. I don't want her to lose Spanish.
Yeah, that's a tough one because in my case, because I live in suburban Boston, my kids don't even speak Spanish. they speak French. they're fluent, immersed French speakers because,
what?
Yeah, no, seriously, because in the town where I live, there's a French immersion program. But what's happened is that they, through French, they've sort of appreciated Spanish. So it was like this weird end around where now, as they're older, it's kind of like, oh, yeah, no, maybe I should, you know, I can pick up Spanish now because it's a romance language.
But there is that sense of, like, especially if you're in the public eye, you've got to be raising, like, great, straight and narrow, 100% Latino kids who are completely cemented in their Latino identity. And, of course.
Yeah, we're a very Boston Irish type town. And so my kids are not that exposed to that. And so their connection to being Puerto Rican is really literally on my shoulders. They've never been to Puerto Rico yet. And we're going to go next year. And the kids are actually really into it. My 12-year-old boy is a huge, huge soccer fan. He does the FIFA soccer and he gets to choose a flag when he customizes his player. And he chose the Puerto Rican flag. And I think he's identifying with that part of himself. I got, you know, the whole pressure thing of like, I didn't do it right. I mean, I used to talk to my oldest daughter in Spanish a lot, and then I started traveling, and then we stopped speaking Spanish. And it really bothers me. It really, really, really bothers me.
What one of the happiest moments for me, Julio, talking about your kid, your son, whose name is Miguel, is with my son. He submitted his applications. He did this alone. And do you want to know the name that he put in for his college applications?
What was it?
His full name, which is Raúl Ariel Jesús de Todos los Santos Pérez Hinojosa. And that is the name that he will have when he graduates on his degree from DePaul University.
Are they going to even fit it on the diploma?
They're going to have to figure out how to fit it. So that was like, oh, my awesome. God, how cool. And, you know, and people, like when he was in his high school, there was like the big competition was who could say his name perfectly well, you know, the fastest.
Right.
So there was like, you know, there was a coolness factor with my son. But with my daughter, it's a little bit different. We wanted to find out how my daughter feels. Does she feel connected to being a Latina? One of our producers sat down with Jurema and with me at a diner around the corner from our home to talk about it. But first we hear just from Jurema. Before I sat down, our producer asked her, how do you identify yourself?
I'm a New Yorker. Or I'll say I'm Mexican and Dominican, but usually I'll say I'm a New Yorker because that's a pretty all-encompassing term. I go to a private high school in New York City. It's pretty diverse, I would say, in terms of like a lot versus a lot of other private high schools, but the majority of people are white and Jewish. On one specific occasion, it was Valentine's Day. It was the Valentine's Day of my sophomore year, and my friend was giving out Valentines, so she gave, like, Ariel to a girl with red hair and whatever, whatever. And I got Jasmine, and she was like, because you're the ethnic one. And I laughed it off initially because I know that I am the only person of color within my immediate friend group. They've known each other for a long time. So I'm the new kid who's also the, like, designated person of color in this friend group. Like, later on, I just thought about it, and I was like, I forgot that I was different. And that was just another reminder that you are different from the rest of us, you know, externally and internally. So just to hear, here's a little reminder as a joke. I'm definitely Latina. I think that at some points, I think everyone has gone through this. I've wished that I was maybe white, maybe sometimes that lifestyle is appealing when you're surrounded by it all the time. I think in the end, I had more pride for who I was, and I just stopped caring after a while because it became too tedious and too draining to trying to fit myself into something that I wasn't. It's really in those moments, like on Thanksgiving or when I'm with my grandmother, really, she's the one who's helped me embrace a lot of who I am. And it was that Mexican side, and then on the Dominican side, it's going to the Dominican Republic so often as a child and always being surrounded by people dancing and music and you know, Dominicans are known for being really loud, and so that loudness that was like equated to life for me and color and, you know, vivaciousness is the only word I can think of.
Initially, Jurema was going to go to a public high school, but she also wanted to have a greater choice of opportunities and options. So we decided to tour some of the private schools in our area. And I think Jurema and I both, when we went to visit, it was the biggest mistake because we just fell in love with the place. It is gorgeous.
It is
beautiful. It's just, and it's like, wow.
But besides that, the teachers are also amazing.
But what I would say is that while Jurema has had that experience intellectually, socially, because she is the term that I do not use in my life, in my family, in my home, but in this place, she is a minority. And that has been a real struggle for my husband and I. If I would have done it differently, if I had the opportunity to do it differently, because I think Jurema would have intellectually found stimulation in other places. And on the other hand, I think the school is trying. The thing is that it's really complicated. As a parent, I'm like, why wasn't I in the school doing the presentation about fill in the blank, El Día de los Muertos, which is what I did in their grammar school. Why wasn't I there talking about Latino USA? Why wasn't I? And that's because I'm working all the time, you know. But yeah, so now I'm wondering actually if I should do that for your school at the end of the year. Make what I do present, because I do think that they would care.
I don't necessarily agree with the whole regret part of it, because I think that I think rather than being like, I don't see myself there, therefore I shouldn't go, I would rather be, I don't see myself there, therefore I should go. They don't have someone like me, and they need someone like me, because they need someone like me. They don't have enough. So that's not me trying to have an inflated ego or anything like that, but I was saying that they needed, I wanted to aid them in their efforts to trying to be more diverse.
Juju, at one point, I think I remember telling you, you're not as culturally tied to these Mexican, Latino, Latin American cultural values. And this is an issue for me. And I said it to her, but it's not your fault. Like, it's, I mean, I grew up spending weeks upon weeks upon weeks with all of my family members in Mexico. We were the only ones who had left. Jurema, you know, her life has been made mostly in the United States, and I have to make peace with that. Right? I have to make peace with that. But the thing that I think is really cool that I'm making peace with is that there is no definition of what it is to be a Latino. Jurema, the fact that she calls herself a Latina, it's how she's going to define herself as a Latina. It's going to be different than me. And plus, I think as you get older, what you really realize is that you have to love your children así como son. And I'm very confident that Raúl Ariel and Jurema, I'm just interested in how they're going to define themselves. That makes me, but that they're going to be okay and that they're setting the new sendero, you know, the new path. Yeah.
I think she's the right amount of worried. I think that she's like, you know, she's concerned. I would be concerned if she wasn't concerned at all, given how much she talks about Latinos in her life. I would be concerned if she was like, oh, you don't care? All right, that's fine. It's just, it's not a very María Hinojosa way of life. I have to be brutally honest.
Oh, because you see in my house, there's mom, mama, and then there's María Hinojosa.
It's two very different people. La alegría. La sonrisa. La alegría. La sonrisa ya nos ayudó comprando el disco. Ya bailar. Ya bailar. A ver.
Thanks so much to my daughter for being so willing to open up like that, and to our digital director, Julio Varela, for sharing his parental perspective, as well as to our producer, Antonia Cerejido, for making that piece happen. That parent-child relationship can make for some, yes, tense, and as you heard, often humorous situations. We wanted to get the perspective of more than one daughter on this week's show, so now we go to Laura Lee Rodriguez. She performs under the name Empress Of, and she's a rising star in the indie music world. But of course, she still worries about what her mother thinks.
Buenos días, mi muchachita. ¿Cómo está? ¿Cómo amaneció? Mándeme el número de la cuenta para ir a hacer el depósito.
Oh, she wants to give me some money. She's so cute.
Mándeme el número de cuenta.
She's like, so, I can't.
La, 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 la. Okay. Hi, I'm Laura Lee Rodriguez, and I go by Empress Of. I make music. I'm from Los Angeles, and I'm a first-generation American. Both of my parents are from Honduras. My mom has been a nanny my whole life, and she's the hardest working woman, like, ever. I don't know, and she just had all these, like, aspirations for me. She, like, learned English by, like, watching TV and the news and stuff, and so she wanted me to be a news anchor and have a bob haircut and wear a suit. And then I, like, listened to Bjork for the first time, and I was like, nope. I'm going to be, like, the weirdest person I can possibly be. Like, something about it, because it was so different from, like, my life. In my head, I was like, I'm going to be a rock star. And then I like, convinced my mom to let me go to an arts high school. Because I was like, Mom, if you don't let me go to this arts high school, I'm going to go to this really ghetto public school and probably get pregnant when I'm, like, 15, like all the other girls in my town. And then she was like, okay, go. And then I, like, became, like, obsessed with studying music. My mom was, like, really hoping that it was a hobby. When I was 17 and I told her that I was going to do music as a career, she cried. I didn't even tell her about Empress Of until, like, after I put out my first EP. I was scared to tell her. I, like, talked to my manager and I was like, I got to tell my mom about this because I'm going on tour for, like, 2 months. I was like, Mom, I'm a producer and I make, you know, electronic music and I sing. And she was like, what do you mean? I was like, yeah, I'm, like, make songs and I put them out on the internet and people like them. I don't know. It was hard. It was, like, really, really hard for her because she knew, like, how difficult my life was going to be. You got to be crazy to want to be an artist because it's impossible. And, like, I'm not, like, some privileged person who, like, grew up with a bunch of money. We lived, like, a very working class life. So to be a musician and live in New York, it's like, I'm crazy. I am crazy. Water, water's for washing. Vino tinto's for drinking. I hate. Now she's, like, 100% behind it. She hasn't had, like, a lot of room in her life to be creative, you know? So she, like, does it through me. To have those conversations with her now is, like, really special, you know? Even, like, the criticism, when she criticizes my music, it's really funny. She's like, Lorelei, what are you talking about in these songs? Like, they make no sense. She's like, Lorelei, you need fancy dresses. She wants me to look like Shakira on stage.
You can, you know, wear something different and something nicer. Okay, please call me back. You're impossible right now.
She wants to go to everything that I do. I came to LA to play, like, this show with Jamie XX and John Hopkins. And she's like, cool, put me on the list for tonight. First of all, her saying that is, like, ridiculous. Secondly, I was like, absolutely not. You can't come. It's a rave. And she was like, no, I'm going to come. I was like, first of all, you're, like, 60. And, like, you know, people are going to be doing drugs and stuff. And, like, it's going to be loud. And it's going to be in the desert. Okay, this is the day. This is the day when I told my mom she could not come to the Jamie XX rave.
Lorelei, how you doing? This is Mom. I wanted to confirm you that, yes, I'm coming to the tonight. I will be there, my dear, okay? Thank you. I just wanted to confirm you, okay?
I was sound checking, and she comes, like, to the gate, and I didn't put her on the list. And the security comes up to me and is like, your mom's outside. And I'm like, oh, God. Yeah, but it ended up being, like, really great. We got to hang out, and she got to experience something she's never experienced before. I mean, she didn't really like the music, to be honest. But she was, like, getting into it. I never did anything like that with my mom. I can't imagine what it's like for my mom when she sees me performing. I think she sees herself a lot. I don't know. That's what I hope. Maybe she sees, like, the opportunity that she's given me, you know, to be an artist. You say I'm a fool. You say I'm the lamppost. What does that mean? I think you're a dream to me.
Lorelei Rodriguez performs as Empress Of. Her debut full-length album is titled Me. We have the link and some of her videos up at latinousa.org, so go check them out. Coming up on Latino USA, the sounds of theater made just for babies. But first...
You're traveling with him because his parents can't, he says to us in Spanish, so he can get to know his family, I imagine.
Stay with us. No se vayan.
Don't show me the stars. Yeah.
Hey, everyone. I want to tell you about something special. It's the first episode of NPR's new Hidden Brain podcast. Shankar Vedantam explores a conversational phenomenon called switch tracking, when two people think they're talking about the same thing, but in reality, they're speeding down separate tracks. It usually doesn't end well. The Hidden Brain podcast premieres September 22nd. Subscribe now on the NPR One app, iTunes, or npr.org/podcasts. And don't miss an episode.
Te pido que no se vayan de mí las palomas blancas, la fuerza que hay en sus alas, que vuelan sobre montañas, que suelo que siempre tiembla, sostenga mis pantorrillas, que el sol de esta melodía sea para alegrar mis días y que nunca se acabe nada de lo nuestro, que nunca se acabe nada de lo nuestro. Te pido que no se muera.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from the Jack Kent Cook Foundation, providing scholarships throughout the nation to exceptionally high-performing students with financial need from middle school to college. Application for high school seniors is open. More at jkcf.org. And Cigna, a global health service company dedicated to helping people improve their health, well-being, and sense of security at cigna.com.
Welcome back to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Today, we're focusing on parenthood. And I've already shared some of my fears. I'm from an immigrant family, and growing up, I spent a lot of time in my native Mexico. But returning home, showing your kids the place where their family comes from, can be a challenge. Nina Feldman brings us this story of one family's struggle to stay connected across a continent.
It's 5 a.m, and I'm with my friend Sarah on her front porch in New Orleans. As the first signs of light appear, our ride to the airport arrives. At the wheel is Hector Dueñas. We're joined by his son, Fabio.
Hola, Fabio. Buenos días.
And Fabio's mom, Olga.
Olga.
Hector and Olga are friends of Sarah. They want Fabio to spend some time with his grandparents in Honduras this summer. Sarah was going anyway, so they asked her to do them a favor and bring him down with her. Fabio was born in the States, so his travel is perfectly legal. It's important to his parents that he get to know his family in San Pedro Sula, so he doesn't forget them.
Oh, pues para que no se olvide de la familia, verdad, de que pues no.
Hector says he'd love to travel if he could, but he's undocumented.
Por lo menos él sí puede hacerlo, entonces es una forma.
Our trip makes him feel good because at least Fabio can go.
Él comparte con la familia de uno allá, ¿verdad?
Fabio is well-traveled for a 6-year-old. He's been down to San Pedro Sula 4 times, each time with a different chaperone who can travel legally. But there is one thing that sets this trip apart. Fabio's little brother, Delvis.
Mi otro hijo, Delvis, está en Honduras.
He was born in the States just like Fabio. But for the past 1.5 years, he's been living in Honduras with his grandmother. She takes care of him while his parents work in New Orleans. But now, Delvis is old enough to go to a Head Start program. So he'll be coming back to New Orleans with us. We arrive at the airport, and Fabio says goodbye to his parents. They ask him to take good care of Delvis for them. Fabio is a travel pro. He's got his iPad with plenty of games. No. It keeps him busy before takeoff.
You want to see the part that gets to me?
Yeah.
Like how many money I have.
141, 142.
Of course, he still has a few questions about traveling. Blowing into the red
tube. What is that? On the wheel?
It's a life vest. After exiting
the airplane. The flight goes smoothly, and Fabio manages to stay entertained, even when electronic devices must be turned off and stowed.
Ready?
Rock, paper, scissors, shoot.
Oh, you beat me. Do it again. Rock, paper, scissors, shoot.
In Honduras, we get off the plane and wait in the customs line. The agent there understands our situation. I find that comforting. You're traveling with him because his parents can't, he says to us in Spanish, so he can get to know his family, I imagine.
Ready to see your fam?
Fabio's family is waiting for us in the lobby. There's Grandma. And of course, Delvis. And then there's the boy's older sister, Stephanie, who's 8. She was born in Honduras, so she won't be traveling back to the States with her brothers. We all pile into the back of Fabio's uncle's pickup truck and head to the house. The family lives in Barrio Cabañas, close to the center of the city. San Pedro Sula is notoriously dangerous. It has one of the highest murder rates in the world. But the family's block is pleasant, and at least feels safe.
Sí, ahí tenemos un kinder al frente. Y tenemos carpintería aquí, carpintería allá. Los vecinos son muy bien.
Grandma Olga runs a pupería, or corner store, that sells drinks, candy, and chips out of the front of the house.
Vendemos churros, vendemos frescos, jugos, dulces, y de todo un poquito.
The block is tree-lined, and there's a kindergarten with a vendor pouring syrup over shaved ice for kids as they get out of school. There's a factory across the street that makes clothing. The kids have a great time. They play soccer in the street and play music together. Despite all that, everyone seems to agree it's for the best if both boys grow up in the States. After 2 weeks of traveling on our own, my friend Sarah and I come back to San Pedro Sula to pick up the kids. The family borrows a neighbor's pickup truck, and everybody climbs in. We're off to the airport. Delvis doesn't quite realize what's happening, that he's leaving his grandma and his sister Stephanie behind. And to stave off tears, the adults keep him in the dark. So the farewells end up being pretty casual, as if the boys were just heading off to school for the day. On the plane, Fabio gets the window seat, but invites Delvis to come sit on his lap so he can look out too. He calls his little brother Moy.
Moy?
A term of endearment. I ask Fabio if he's excited to be going back to see his mom and dad with Delvis.
No.
¿Por qué no?
I want to be in Honduras, he says, because it's nicer there. Delvis, too, starts to miss his grandma. He's afraid of the dark and isn't too happy as the cabin lights dim. But as soon as we land, everything changes.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to New Orleans.
Fabio gives Delvis a little pep talk, listing all the things they'll do together.
A bañar. Sí. A jugar.
Play.
A ver tele.
Watch TV.
A dormir con mama.
Sleep next to mama.
Vamos a fiesta.
We'll go to a party. It's late at night when we arrive back in New Orleans. The boys are wired. They pass through customs and burst through the doors that lead to the baggage claim area where their mother's waiting. Olga drops to one knee and wraps her youngest son, Delvis, into her arms. She hasn't seen him for a year and a half, since he was a baby. Olga and Delvis have a quiet moment to themselves. But the welcome party here is even bigger than the one in San Pedro Sula. Cousins of all ages have come to greet Fabio, and some meet Delvis for the first time. Everyone piles into the back of Hector's SUV, and we head home. Olga calls her mom in San Pedro Sula to let her know we've made it safely. She passes the phone to Delvis. For now, it seems like everyone is where they're supposed to be.
Quiero que recuerdes que tu protesta solo vale si desprecias, si la sobreabundancia acaparada.
Thanks to Nina Feldman for that piece. Parents will go to great lengths to help their children make it. Some situations, like what the parents of Fabio and Delvis face, can be really difficult. But others can just be fun, like when you're exposing your children to new things, like live theater. If you think live theater is lost on young children, well, think again. Educational theater expert Christina Farrell says sensory-rich live performances can help them.
Babies and toddlers are developing language skills at that age, and the way that they develop is by building a wide vocabulary, an encyclopedia, if you will, of sounds, of patterns that they can explore in the world around them.
Mexico has a long tradition of street theater for children, as I myself saw as a kid. And in Pittsburgh, a Mexican company called Teatro al Vacío packed in parents and their youngest children for one of their plays. Erica Veras was there and tells us more.
Today's theatergoers are sucking on pacifiers or sitting on someone's lap. The show they're watching starts with music, lights, and movement. When the music stops, they react immediately.
Oh no! Look there. Oh no! Oh!
Three performers step into the middle of the cabaret at Theater Square in downtown Pittsburgh. It's an unusual space, a black box with a cluster of thick, colored rubber mats in the center. There, the actors tell the story of Umbo. Umbo is the story of a light, projected offstage with a laser. The actors are trying to catch it, like a cat. Along the way, the actors crawl, they jump, they lunge for the light. The music they play on a xylophone guides the audience's emotions. Actress Carolina Garibay says she channels into her inner baby while she's performing.
Cada movimiento que hacemos está conectado con la respiración, como si fuéramos bebés. Hubo un momento del proceso de la creación que era...
Every movement we make is connected with our breathing, she says, as if we're babies. The process from the beginning, from lying down, from standing up, crawling, trying to grab things, the things we have stored in our bodies.
Sensaciones que tenemos guardadas también nosotros en el cuerpo.
Teatro al Vacío is a three-person company that exclusively makes children's theater. They're based out of Mexico City. Umbo, they wrote for babies. They worked with a developmental psychologist to help them figure out what a child that young can handle. The actors don't speak English, but that doesn't matter, especially when they perform the show internationally, as they have in Poland and Italy, and now Pittsburgh. Not speaking English means nobody talks in this play, at least not in the usual way. Actor Jose Agüero explains.
Y todo el lenguaje tiene que ver con el movimiento.
All the language has to do with movements and images, he says. And we have found that language is a very positive way to communicate with children.
Para poder comunicarnos con los niños.
The third actor, Adrian Hernandez, elaborates.
Es, si me enojo, si me peleo con el otro,
o, if I get upset, si le doy la espalda, if I fight with someone else, if I turn my back to him, if I give him a big hug, he says, those types of actions are gestures that are very recognizable.
Gestos muy, muy reconocibles.
The real star of the show is Umbo, the light. Umbo morphs into colorful shapes like a butterfly, wowing the kids.
Maybe it's a butterfly. You think it's a butterfly? Yeah.
Where's the butterfly?
The actors never do manage to catch the light. Instead, Umbo turns into a big ball, which they can hold, push, and play with.
Do you want to go see?
At this point, the kids get to waddle into the stage area to push Umbo around. Mary Crossley is here with her 19-month-old daughter, Zella.
I think she was fascinated at first, a little bit reserved about it all, just taking it all in. And then once she started to feel comfortable, she just became so engaged and wanted to know what everything was and what everyone was doing.
By the end of the show, Zella is on the stage with the other children. It's a total free-for-all. She chases the light until it disappears and then plays with the ball. Finally, she hugs the actor's legs. That's as high up as she can reach.
Thanks to Erica Veras for bringing us that story from Pittsburgh. It's important for parents to do interactive things with their children. At the top of our show, we heard from Sonia Manzano, better known to kids everywhere as Maria from Sesame Street. Now, have you ever seen those parodies on Sesame Street where they'll do a positive, kid-friendly version of a TV show that actually the adults watch? Well, one reason they do those parodies is because parents are more likely to watch those with their children. And research shows that parental engagement helps the kids learn. So, for today's Sabiduría, we return to Maria herself, the actress Sonia Manzano. Now, in her interview, I asked her to speak from her own experience of being a mother and of working with children for so many years. And here's what she wishes that parents understood about children.
So know your kids. If we're going to make a point of this, really know your kid. We put our hopes and dreams in our kids, and we, want what's the best thing for them. But often it's our idea of what is the best thing for them. And it takes, I think, courage to really see their attributes, even if they don't mirror you in any way. Kids are born with their own set of tools. You know how we always say to kids, where did you get that idea? They got it from themselves. It has nothing to do with you or the father or the sibling. And that's a good thing. And our job is to nurture whatever their tools are. There's this whole idea about grit. Kids don't have any grit or stick-to-itness. So we got to teach them how to stick to a thing. Yet, on the other hand, we take away every experience that'll make them resourceful. I was at a cocktail party and a woman from Korea said, why are Americans so uncomfortable with the idea that their kids should be uncomfortable for 1 minute? They need a sippy cup. They need the Cheerios. They need the little blanket. If there's a fight in school, the mother has to go in to solve it. We never let the kids have that feeling of, boy, I can't wait till I go home and have that dinner, because we don't want them to feel a little bit uncomfortable or a little bit con hambre and then a little hungry. And then they grow up and they give up easily. And then we say, oh, we have to come up with a course on stick with it, on grit. It's like we take vitamins out of real food and then give it to them in capsules. I think that we take a lot of real life experience away from children.
Those can be some hard lessons for parents to learn, but I think many of us do end up learning them, whether we like it or not. Thank you, Sonia Manzano, for your words of wisdom. That's it for this week, mis queridos. Latino USA is produced by Daisy Rosario, Lita Hartman, Marlon Bishop, Michael Simon Johnson, Antonia Cerejido, Julia Alsop, and Sarah Barrett. Julia Hsu is our production assistant. Our engineer is Cornelius McMoyler. Nadia Raymond is our music consultant. Our interns are Maggie Freeling and Janice Yamoka. Nancy Trujillo makes it all happen. Special thanks to Northwest Public Radio and YV Tech in Yakima, Washington, where we are here for a week of reporting for an upcoming episode. Our show was founded at the University of Texas at Austin. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again next week. And in the meantime, look for us on Facebook, on Twitter, and on Tumblr. And I'll see you on my Instagram. Hasta la próxima, everyone.
Latino USA is made possible in part by the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation and the Ford Foundation, dedicated to working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide.
Some of the early stuff that I see myself doing on Sesame Street, I'm thinking, boy, you're so snarky with the bird and the grouch. I can't believe they let me do that sometimes.
You felt a little...
I was just like, come on, Big Bird.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from Emily and Antoine Van Ochtmail supporting New Futures, which works to help low-income D.C. area youth graduate from community college or certificate programs and become financially self-sufficient. Information is available at newfuturesdc.org. And the Lemelson Foundation, committed to improving lives through invention in the U.S. and developing countries, on the web at lemelson.org. This is NPR.